News Talks Off the Ball.
7 days a week.
Thanks to Air. With live Premier League action all this month on the Air Sport Pack.
All right, you're very welcome back. A little earlier than usual, we've got Keith Wood with us. Keith, good evening to you.
Good evening.
Sorry,
how
I did interrupt your text there. I should have looked over. And said,
I was just kind of daydreaming a little. And happy birthday.
No, thanks very much. Nearly the same age as you now.
I have to say, I'm slightly taken aback. I thought you were significantly older than I was.
Keith.
But you look, never mind.
There you go.
You'll get over it. Clean shaven might work for you.
I don't know.
Scruffy, you are. I think
the biggest surprise, Keith, was Richie's 35. That was the biggest surprise.
I tell you, New Talk ages you. That's the truth.
Thank you, it really does.
What's going on, Richie?
It is scoreless in both of tonight's matches in the Premier League, Southampton and Manchester United. Not much riding on this one. But in the Championship playoff semi-final second leg at Hillsborough remains Sheffield Wednesday 0, Huddersfield 0, 0-0 on aggregate 2 after that first leg of the John Smith. We should mention about the game at the St Mary's that Sergio Romero has saved a Manolo Gabbiadini penalty after Eric Bailly committed the foul in the box, but 20 minutes to gone in that one, and it is still scoreless. Elsewhere, and indeed here at home, Limerick are to officially announce their new manager tomorrow morning. Former Everton and Oldham defender Neil MacDonald is expected to be the man unveiled as Martin Russell's successor. He's managed Blackpool and Carlisle in England. I'm getting a solid nod from across the table here from Mr. Kilvan.
I played with him. I was playing alongside him at Preston.
He's most recently served as Mike Phelan's assistant at Hull. He also worked under Sam Allardyce at West Ham. Limerick currently sixth in the SSE Airtricity Premier Division, with Dundalk visiting Marketsfield on Friday night. While Cork City's trip to Shamrock Rovers is the standout tie in the EA Sports Cup semi-finals. The draw was made earlier this evening. Dundalk will travel to Eamon DC Park to face Galway United. Both ties are set for Monday, August 7th. Emlyn Mulligan today ruled out of Leitrim's championship campaign. The forward required surgery after tearing his cruciate ligaments for the third time in his career. Leitrim face London in the Connacht quarterfinals a week on Sunday, with the winners progressing to a semi-final with Roscommon. Mulligan had been an ever-present in the championship last year for Leitrim after returning from a year away from the county. And some news that broke in the past few minutes. Former Leinster lock and Ireland lock Mike McCarthy has announced his retirement from rugby with immediate effect. He had been due to join Narbonne from the start of next season, but ultimately it's an elbow problem that has called time in his career, as he says, before he was ready for it to be so.
Alright, good stuff. You wanted to talk to Keith about Jim McGuinness?
No, Keith's brought it up there. I think it's a good point. I think it's worth getting a perspective from another sport as well to see what Jim's
doing.
Rugby
lads think they can do anything, though. That's the thing.
Of course. I am joking. I love the idea of getting different thoughts from different people, an idea of looking at something. I remember reading Bob Rotella books, you know, obviously on golf, that I found his way of thinking was phenomenal for captaincy and leadership and being in the moment and actually getting some of distracting thoughts away from you. And I know from a psychological point of view that can be very good. On the technical parts it becomes incredibly difficult, and I know that Clive Woodward tried to make that transition across, was it with Southampton back in the day, which went down like the proverbial lead balloon. And it's something that's very interesting. I think it becomes incredibly hard to be the boss, but I think you can have you can be incredibly valuable in other sports if those sports are open to you, or your head coach or your manager is really open to the idea that this is somebody that brings something else.
Yeah, that's not really what we're talking about, though, right? In this instance,
yeah, I think that was my point was pretty simple. I think they can offer a total different perspective, and I think Jim McGuinness's huge strength is certainly the mental side of it, the preparation, how he's going to get a team prepared. I think the problem would lie on the training ground. I do think that, and I think that credibility would certainly be an issue when he's day-to-day with those players on the training ground, yeah.
I think with certain sport in general, once you're out of the game, even your own game, for a few years, it's very difficult to go back in. Yes, you can do that mental stuff and you can get people, you know, fully geared up to perform. But technically, it changes quite subtly. Like rugby changes, and I knew about 3 years after I'd stopped playing rugby that actually at times I get frustrated with the fact that I'm saying things that aren't so anymore.
They're out of date.
There's elements of it that are actually out of date very quickly, and you have to be careful with that. So, and it's fine actually commentating on it because you can still see it, and you're still dealing with the emotion of what sport is.
Yeah.
And you have a very good insight into terms of that. But some of the technical components change. I took a training session. I take very few of them now because coaching is definitely not my bag. It's one of the things I know not to do. But I took a scrummaging session on how to strike the ball at one stage. And the players, the hookers, who this is 7 or 8 years, maybe 10 years after I'd stopped, had lost the flexibility. So it didn't matter what I actually said in terms of, actually, this is where you take the ball out of the scrum half's hands and you put it back through that channel. They couldn't move their leg away from almost the centre line because
it was a skill they hadn't practiced.
It was a skill that was gone from the game, and they needed to be stronger and more built up around the hips, and actually less flexibility was better for them. So, and actually, if you notice the way World Rugby went with the laws tried to change that everything had to go straight, but actually that was unrealistic because none of the guys had the flexibility. A couple of them had. Some of the old hat guys had, but some of the newer guys absolutely hadn't. And, you know, the game changes all the time. So for the start of our conversation to bring a guy from one sport entirely into another one, I think that's an unbelievably hard one. But I do think he could be a great member of that coaching team. Mm.
All right, good stuff. We pick this up again on the football show because there's been a big response to Kevin's rant earlier on.
It was hardly a rant, was it?
I wanted to ask Kevin do you ever play any rugby, by the way?
A little bit at school, yeah. I was more that lad on the wing, though. I was more the...
Look, I don't doubt it. You look like you could do with a good feed. did you enjoy it?
I did. I did enjoy playing most sports, if not all sports. Yeah, I did. I had a go at everything.
I think we need to have an off-the-ball touch rugby challenge. I think that's really, really important. I mean, I played a bit of soccer, you know, went back playing a bit, you know, five-a-side more often, and I've pretty much stopped doing it again now. I'm still fast, but it takes a while to get up to pace. No, it takes a while to get up to pace, and I can't stop. So yeah. I'm a liability to everybody. Liability to the fence.
We need to get the challenge match. We need to get the touch rugby. We need to get then a 7-a-side, 8-a-side.
Yeah, sounds good. It's game on. Your Wikipedia page does refer to you as the raging potato. So,
I don't quite know where that came out of, but we leave it.
I can see it on the football pitch. Maybe you're one of your five-a-side team. That could be your name for it.
I have a different level of belief of what constitutes the law or rules of the game than most. So, I'd like to say I'm aesthetically pleasing and cultured. None of the above words apply to me.
All right, time for Wednesday Night Rugby.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
Jonathan Davis, good evening to you. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I'm just chuckling at the fact that Keith said he was speed. But remember, it's all relative, Keith, okay?
You were unbelievably fast, Jiffy, in fairness. But you are actually as old as Jerk Hilroy looks. That's the only way I'd put it. Your pace is long gone in the past, Jiffy, absolutely.
You're right. Fear was a wonderful thing.
Yes.
Did you play other sports, Jonathan?
Yeah, I played sort of football and cricket as a kid growing up.
And was there ever any prospect of you being pro in one of those other sports?
Not really. I think that it's changed now because, you know, with Swansea and Cardiff City, in their leagues, there's so many scouts around and there's academies. So anyone's got a little bit of talent, they are scooped up and put into academies at the age of 8. So you had to be an exceptional footballer to get picked up by the likes of Manchester, London clubs, or the Merseyside clubs. So I think the kids now with talent have got a far greater opportunity to pick football or rugby.
I'm just remembering I can't remember what game it was, Jonathan, but you dropped a ball onto your toe and just kicked it, and you had pure unadulterated pace. It was actually the quickest I've ever seen from a 10 to score a try. What game was that? Would you remember that? You're going to say you did many of them. But
Scotland, yeah. I think. It's 88. So, yeah, Gavin was on the out of position on the touchline again. So there was a little gap behind. And poor old Derek White got caught between me and the ball. So I did say if I hadn't have beaten Derek White, he made me look very fast as well, actually, because he was deceptive. He was slower than what you thought. So,
That's the key, isn't it? You want to
I think so.
Line up one of the front rows, take them on.
Yeah. It's amazing. I remember Mark Ring used to line up. Mark Ring wasn't the quickest. He was very, very talented. But he always used to run out, onto the international field behind the prop forward and sprint past him. So everyone thought he was so, so quick.
I remember playing a game against New Zealand. It's kind of opposite now with the Lions tour coming up. And I saw Doug Howlett and he got the ball and I said, I have him. Happy there. Now there's the touchline. And it was like a different... He had pure unadulterated gas. I had only 2 or 3 metres to the line and I was very comfortable. I had the angle to get him. And it was what was my first time playing against him and I didn't get within an ass's roar of him. I mean, he was when you see pure pace on the field, it's extraordinary. Oh, it's extraordinary.
It is, you know, there's no substitute. I've seen it. Like, you know, Robert Howley was so quick as well. I've seen someone actually leave him for dead on the sevens field. And I thought that Robert was running with a fridge freezer on his back, right? And he was quick. But it's just, yeah, when you know you're quicker than someone and, you know, you got the angles right, it makes some players look very, very slow, but there is no substitute.
Before I start talking about the actual matches this weekend, I just wanted to read you some stuff from Hayden Triggs, and it's interesting that we've kind of gone down this road of talking about your time as players, because he says he's retiring from the game at the end of the season. This is going to be his last game for Leinster this week, and he talks about rugby has changed beyond identity to me. I started when it was semi-pro and just starting professionally. The game is different now and it's almost like I don't like it anymore. As professionals, we're paid to do this. That's kind of our product. The game is what I love. I've said that before, but all the shit around it is hard. And he says, hang on a second. In New Zealand, and it's a bit different here, but a sportsman runs a red light, there's a dude with a camera giving out to him and going to report it to the cops. There's so much pressure and stress, and that's what these young kids are coming into. They don't know the beers after a Thursday night. They don't know the bus trips to away matches. They know none of that, and I do, and that's what I grew up in. And it's funny that we've kind of all been really keen for the headlong rush to professionalism that has brought rugby to the point where it's a much bigger game, it gets much more TV coverage, there's much more sponsorship around it, there's much more analysis, there's jobs around it. And yet, there was a bit of magic in some of that stuff that is definitely disappearing.
Well, I think we talked about it last week and Off the Ball Live, and we touched on the idea that there were different times and it has been different. And it's funny, I still, every time you talk to an old guy, and I'm now an old guy, and Jiffy's an older guy. And
Willie, older guy, yeah.
Yeah, older. And Willie John McBride last week, we all kind of think we had the best of it. I did a touch of amateur, a touch of professional. You know, I really appreciate the amateur days. Jonathan Sexton gave a line last week to that. He said, but I'm really happy when I win. And I wish I'd won more. And so it's funny, I get caught between the two of those. I wish we'd been a little bit more professional, the system had been more professional, or we were in a more professional period of time. But I do enjoy the crack that has come from it. And I really enjoy the friendships that have come from it. And the friendships with the guys that you played against, not just the guys that you played with, so, and the guys that you tour on a Lions tour with, or... And I've had the benefit, I think, since retiring, of, you know, working with the BBC and becoming friends with Jonathan and Jerry and, you know, all those guys. You get to meet all these guys with a shared element from it. If I was looking back at my career, I'd say I didn't enjoy it enough at the time, the actual playing of it.
Yeah.
And I still see that in some of the players around it. Sport is
That's
tough.
That's kind of youth, though, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, I think you can't, when you're playing, Keith, whether you're an amateur or a professional, you can't really enjoy the game as much as you had hoped for, because it's so intense and winning is everything that it doesn't matter if you're professional or amateur. I think it's in your DNA, you want to win it, and you can't enjoy test matches really until the final whistle is over unless you're, you know, 2 scores ahead. So I understand what you're saying, but I played in an amateur, mainly amateur, but then professional with rugby league, and I came back to professional. But the good thing about that was the rugby league boys were professional, but when a lot of the rugby union boys went in there, they sort of enjoyed themselves as well. I think there's a place where I think that it's over the top a little bit now. They say, no, you can't, you know, enjoy a drink, you know, or a relaxation on a Saturday night if you're playing the following Saturday. I think that's total rubbish. I think you're at the peak of your performance. You train every day. You can sweat it out. You know, I think sometimes having a release makes you a better player the following week, because I speak to some of the players and they go, oh, a Saturday match is like a Monday training. Well, that's not right. That's not the job where you enjoy. You know, that is not right. And I think sometimes it's down to a lot of the rugby directors and the captain to instill kind of enjoyment and a little bit of the amateur ethos in it and give player's responsibility, but you have to enjoy, because as Keith has rightly said, it's a privileged position when you're playing, and you don't realise how privileged you are until you finish. And we were lucky, we kept that going in a little way with the BBC, because I remember Keith's last show for BBC, and then we had Paul O'Connell, Martin Williams, myself, Inverdale, having a couple of pints in Cardiff, which, you know, was reminiscent of the days when I played as well. And yeah, I don't think it might have harmed me actually when I played, but the balance was right. I really enjoyed, you know, the successes. We, you know, we enjoyed it. The defeats, we stuck together, and you know, we tried to enjoy the situation we were in, I suppose.
Triggs is talking about a couple of things as well. He's talking about the physical strain that a lot of the current generation are putting their bodies through. I see the guys who've just retired, sadly passing away or having heart complications or the worst case scenario, committing suicide. And so he's talking about the pressure that they have from social media, and he's also talking about this. And like, it's very much unknown where that road takes rugby.
I think it's unknown through all sport, and we tend to see some of the evidences of that from other professional sports, American sports that have been professional for far longer. I always say, in terms of those elements, there's a choice in terms of social media, whether you want to engage in that or not. And that is a choice, not any other way. And I do think that the pressure that comes to perform, most of that pressure, and I think from the vast majorities of players I played with, most of that pressure comes from yourself. You want to perform, you know, you want to do really, really well. And I still feel we probably may push things a little bit too far in terms of the amount of training that happens. And there's a very fine line between training and overtraining, and living in the moment and living your match for 7 days of the week coming up to it. That's not healthy.
And the size of the bodies, obviously, as well.
The size of the bodies, too. I think, it's funny how you get kind of slagged off for doing it. I'd actually often have business meetings on the Friday before an international. Now, I know it was professional at that stage. And, you know, you'd have some of the coaches saying, well, you shouldn't be doing that. Or some of the players, why are you doing? I used to do it to relax. There's nothing. I need to not think about the game tomorrow. This is an opportunity to meet a businessman, do, you know, whatever it was. And I love that idea to think a little bit differently and de-stress a little in that way. But the pushing for training, like, why do you train? Why do you push yourself? Why do you make yourself that big? It's to be better on Saturday. But you shouldn't be shattered all the time. And I have to say, towards a lot of my career, at the end of my career, I was very tired.
Yeah.
You know, and you're tired.
I think rest is underrated. You know, I'd never want to play. I didn't want to train on a Friday before a game. I wasn't going to get faster. I wasn't going to get stronger. I wasn't going to get quicker. My skills weren't going to get, you know, better in one day. So I would, like Keith, I would get away from it, totally relax, chill out, release, but then switch on for the Saturday morning. And I agree with Keith. Throughout my professional career, even in rugby league, I worked. I had a part-time job and I worked 3 days a week when I was a professional player, because I thought it was far more benefit for me to focus on my rugby as an enjoyment. I trained when I had to, lunchtimes and everything, but for me the release was, you know, was special, because I really enjoyed the game. And then when I switched on, I was totally focused on it.
Well, when you look at Leinster in particular in an Irish context, Saracens in an English context, there's a huge drive on all those players to be... to get an academic qualification.
Yeah. Rugby Players Ireland make sure that they hassle the players to the point where they have a third level education ongoing at the same time, is it? And it definitely seems to be helping them.
Saracens are setting up an entrepreneurship program where they're trying to recommend that they go into business and help them, not back them, but support them, I think, with tax and legal and how to go about all these different elements.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, there is more to it. You know, we were playing an awful lot more games, I think, back in my day, says the old fella. And there's far more concentration on shorter number of games, a smaller number of games this time. I think there's an opportunity to have less of a uni focus just on rugby. You know? Yeah. And I think that's probably healthier for body and mind, if we're to be honest.
We had a good
start. And I think also, sorry, butting in on that, I got a lot of friends who have gone into coaching. You know, we're at that age where a lot of the players we played with and against have gone into coaching and, you know, rugby director. You know, they just get into this bubble. And I think they would be far better to have someone, you know, like Sir Keith or myself or anyone who's got no interest or no conflict with that club, to give them a different view on things in the club. Because once things go badly, they kind of close shop, they get very insular, and it really affects their thinking. They think the world's against them, and I don't think they kind of see things clearly. And you just need a different perspective or an outlet from somewhere else or do something else. But because they feel pressure, I've got to be in work at 7, I've got to watch so much analysis and video, I've got to do this, I've got to do the training, I've got to do... I tell you what, I doubt very much if I could enjoy being a professional rugby player now, because I would be bored to bloody death.
Jonathan, I did it for the last 3 or 4 years of my career. I had 3 guys that I thought had my best interest at heart. That weren't really in rugby, or definitely weren't in the environs of my rugby, and I would ask and look for their opinion, and I used to get it good, bad and indifferent, and some of it very, very harsh. But I knew that the agenda was to be supportive, but it wasn't to paper over anything at all. It was to actually try and give it, and I used to give me a frame of reference. I was a very harsh critic. Still, you know, that's, I think, built into all of us. You can be incredibly hard on yourself, and you're demanding of so many different things to be pushed forward. And it is the need sometimes to just get that other person that you'd say, look, I don't need the pat on the back. Will you just give me a bit of a bollocking that of what I've done wrong, or show me something that I'm not seeing myself? I found that absolutely invaluable at the latter end of my career.
All right, I should talk about these 2 games of the weekend. Actually, we did a good Saturday panel about that last Saturday. If anybody's interested, you can get it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Leinster against Scarlets at the RDS on Friday at 7:45, and then at Thomond on Saturday, it's Munster against the Ospreys. How good are the Scarlets team, Jonathan? What kind of a chance do you give them against Leinster?
Well, you know, you're looking into it. The 2 favourites are Leinster and Munster. You know, they're on top, and they've been the flag bearers for the Pro 12. But I do think the Scarlets have come under the radar. They're on a good consecutive run of wins. They've got a good balance of forwards and backs. They're playing attractive rugby where Ken Owens and Rob Evans, and I even saw Samson Lee make a pass last week. So, you know, they've got that kind of approach now where they can play. And the good thing about it is that the forwards are really getting stuck in. And if they can get a bit of parity with Leinster forwards, I think with the confidence that they've got, I think they've got with confidence, it's a huge asset for the Scarlets. And I think that for the first time in a long, long time, maybe they can get a result out in Leinster.
Yeah, I'm comfortable to disagree. Not just on a national view. I thought Leinster are sickened by the way they played. A couple of weeks ago, it was a dead rubber, which nobody likes playing in, and I just don't think they got their standard anywhere near where they'd like to, and they're bristling enough from that reason. You know, sometimes you just need an extra little something bitter just to drive you on. But I think they've improved. But Scarlets have improved as the season's gone on, look very, very good. They've a good chunk of Lions that are there as well. Liam Williams, you know, it's fantastic. But I just think Leinster are going to set the world alight. Home advantage has won in nearly all of these games.
Every single semi-final since it's been a semi-final.
And I think it's, you know, no one's won a semi-final away from home. So, and it's a big ask of the 2 Welsh regions. But I do think, you know, if you'd have asked me before last Saturday's game against the Ospreys, I'd have said no, Scarlets have got no chance. But I just think because of the way they play and they've got good players there, I think... And I understand they are, you know, clear underdogs. It would be a shock if they won, but they, at the moment, I just think they're capable, and they haven't been for the last, you know, 5 years. No, where they are at the moment, with the big players playing well, if Leinster aren't on top of the game, it could they could sneak a result.
I think a lot of people will look at the Ospreys starting lineup and give them a better chance maybe of winning against Munster than perhaps, notwithstanding the lines that Scarlets have, just because that sense that they haven't been great over the last number of years. What's changed about them this year, and why are they at this now stage in the revolution where maybe they might be on the verge of something?
I just think it's the way they're playing. They're putting the ball through the hands. Their forwards are, got stronger in the scrum and the liner. So, they've always been kind of poor, and they've been blown away in the European games by the bigger, stronger packs. But at the moment now, they dominated against the Ospreys last week, and I haven't seen that for a long, long time, purely because I think of the front row has given them a better platform that I've seen from a long, long time. So now it gets people like Shingler, Barkley, and James Davis, and Josh, even people like Turnbull, to play, above what they have over the last couple of years. So it gives the scrum halves a better platform. Rhys Patchell is back, and he's capable of going well. And of course, you've got Liam Williams and Jonathan Davis and Scott Williams. So I just feel because the forwards have got to play with a lot of confidence. That's the only reason I think they are playing a lot better because of key players. If you look at it, Ken Owens, then you've got a good back row. You've got Gareth Davis or Alec Davis. Then you've got Jonathan Davis. Then you've got Liam Williams. So there's a little bit of a stronger backbone.
Yeah, they're pretty speedy out wide as well. The Munster season obviously has been this wave of emotion washing through Thomond Park, and this is the last game of the season at Thomond Park, and really this is one where there's going to be a lot of pressure, I think, on the team. So far they've been kind of riding the wave. This is where now it's the last opportunity for them to deliver.
I don't know if I go with that, Ger. I thought they got over the wave as opposed to riding it. I thought they dealt with the match post Anthony's funeral, and they dealt with the couple of weeks after that. They dealt with the game in Paris, which was a huge emotional one, and I think there was a change after that then to not being as a reaction but now being a continuance of what they'd actually built up in their own confidence in the association that they re-energized with their supporters, and it was fantastic. And how they got absolutely shell-shocked against Saracens. I mean, that really hurt. And I think it put Munster back in its, back in its box for a while. It was just against a team that was just hyper-efficient and aggressive and focused. And then we saw what Saracens did in the final, which was an extension of that. There's nobody in the tournament, with the exception of Leinster and a Munster rivalry, that will meet that level of intensity. I don't see that at all. But the fear I have for this game is that some of the doubt just from that game seeps in. And Munster need to not worry about that game and concentrate on all the things that they've done very well. And if they turn up in the manner in which they've turned up all year, with the exception of that game, they'll be absolutely fine. It'll still be a very tough game. It'll be, Ospreys are bloody capable, very capable. But if Munster play as they can play, I think Munster win. The fear for me is they start doubting themselves at different times because things didn't go well a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, Ospreys obviously smarting from the defeat that we've talked about to Scarlets last week. Was there anything in that they'll carry into this, or can they just wipe that from their memories as well, Jonathan?
I think they can forget that. I think they had to win one game, and they won that game against Ulster. I thought Ulster weren't great that day as well. But it's an odd game because, whatever's happened with Munster this year, from the outside looking in, and you don't really know what goes on. They've coped exceptionally well with what's happened, and they've performed, above their station. And I think against Saracens, it just shows what a good side, quality Saracens are last week. So going into it, I think the way the Ospreys played, I just can't. If it was any other club, I couldn't see them getting up for this one, especially in Munster. But it's the Ospreys, as Keith said. They just, really kind of single-minded, insular. Everyone hates us. You know, they could go there and they know what they have to do to get to beat Munster. They know the intensity they have to play at. So it's a big, big call for them. But again, it's they're capable of doing it. But I still think that, you know, Munster will know to overcome that and win the game.
Here's the thing. As the semi-finals roll on, eventually one of the home teams is going to get turned over. Like, the odds increase of one of the home sides losing one of these games eventually.
Yeah, try not to say that in earshot of Jonathan Davis. Let's hope it's next year when there's other teams that are in it and not when Munster or Leinster are away from home.
It is, but, you know, I think there's only, I'm trying to think of who's been to the semi-finals. Where else in the semi-final? The Glasgow had a home draw, didn't they? I think Connacht had a home semi-final draw. So most of the semi-finals, I think, have been at Leinster and Munster. So you can see why they haven't been, successful.
Yeah,
so
Ospreys lost.
They're difficult.
Ospreys lost 2-1 by 5 and 1-3, I think, or maybe 6-3 were the score. So Ospreys have been right there at Thomond in the past.
Yeah.
But it's a great. I hope it finishes, you know, with a bang. And I think that the Friday night game could be a real classic because. Well, the Scarlets have come to play, and I know Leinster, you know, can play, you know, every style of rugby. A great respect for Leinster, and if they throw it about, then it could be a classic. But then if see the Scarlets are on fire and playing with confidence, you know, Leinster have the capabilities of closing it down and playing it differently. So that could be a classic, and then it could be a real, real struggle then, you know, on Saturday.
All right, Jonathan, great stuff. Thanks very much for joining us.
Cheers. All the best, lads.
Cheers, Jiffy. Bye, Jeff.
All well.
That was great. Now, we do have a pair of tickets to give away to that game. I'll tell you how to win those in just a minute. Keith, great stuff. Thanks very much.
Pleasure.
What sport would you like to transfer to if you had a choice?
Knowing the state of my body now, I would have loved to have been a golfer.
Oh, yeah.
And
you still fancy yourself as one, though, don't you?
Of course. But
the seniors tour is like... In your idle moments during the afternoon,
5 years away now. Yeah, no, I couldn't. I've been fortunate enough to have played with some really, really great golfers, and we play golf only after a fashion.
Yeah, it's true. We've got a pair of tickets to the Guinness Pro 12 semi-final, Leinster against Scarlets at the RDS on Friday to give away. Check out Off the Ball's Facebook page for your chance to win. Keith, great stuff. Thanks a million.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love, free, on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.